Welcome back to the one, the only, the Apple Worm podcast. Yes, this is the episode that we have all been waiting for. This is what it all was about when we started this movie and tech review episode. This is Endgame. This is the movie that we were born to see. At least my generation, because this is the Star Wars moment of my time. This is the change of a whole cinematic universe. The ending, the payoff, the let go of childhood memories of investment in hundreds and hundreds of hours of watching movies. And this is it. This is how this ended. This is the episode, and now that the dust has settled, pun intended, of course, now that it has all been said and done, the Apple Worm podcast will give you guys the very true, honest, direct opinion on why this movie is one of the biggest cinematic achievements of probably ever in cinema. It is something that definitely changed the way movies are made. It changed the way movies are scheduled. It changed the way people see movies in general. You know, now people go into a movie and if the movie leaves them in a cliffhanger, or if the movie credits roll up, they might think, I might have to stay to see if there's something after the movie. It all started in 2008. And no, this is not going to be a recap of the movie. This is going to be a part one and part two of how this movie was so meticulously built, made, constructed. It was a payoff. It was a finally for so many moments. And it was just fan service in general. And let's start there. Let's start in the beginning. People guessed, and I tried, I did my best, and I failed, but at least I tried, and not seeing many spoilers. I saw two of the trailers. I did not see any of the TV spots. I did not see any of the like small snippets or scenes that were leaked or whatever, nothing. And I stayed off of a lot of fan theories that were being thrown out, and except for this one, because it was all over and people were like, no, this is going to be a time travel movie and they're going to go to the past and they're going to kill Thanos there or something like that. And I was like, okay, what? And so I did manage to not see that, because I love that. I wish I would have been surprised by the time traveling aspect of the movie. But they still managed to keep a lot of secrets. They still managed to keep not just who died and who lived, and not just if Thor was fat or not, but plot twists that were very, very significant. And that is where we all start. I love that we start at a moment and we take time to characterize the fact that the people who were left, the characters who are alive at the moment of the beginning of the movie, are the original Avengers. Hawkeye, Captain America, Iron Man, Hulk. What? I said Hulk twice. Thor and Black Widow. I love, 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 love that we get to see how this loss, how what Thanos said he was going to do and then did, affected each and every one of them. Because this was going to be the end. We had to see how their evolution, their growth, their union, their fighting against one another and then coming back together for the greater good was going to make them a better team, a lasting team. And we get to that in the end, but my point is that there is a differencing in this movie, and there is a throwback, if you will, to a lot of other movies. And the point being, this movie is not and will not be as good if you have not seen all 21 previous movies. I believe that the more movies you have seen from this universe, the better that this movie will end up becoming. This movie is exponentially better every time you add a previous movie. Are they all good? No. Are there some really horrid ones? Yes. Do you get bored at some points? Yes. Does it all pay off and show that it's worthwhile? I could not emphasize that enough. People guess the time travel plot, but nobody expected the first act of this movie. At least at the four times that I've gone to the movies to see this, none of the audiences have reacted differently, or at least in a nonchalant way of looking at the when the 5 years later comes on the screen, everybody every time gasps. They go, "What?" Or they, or it's just amazing to see the reaction of people to these movies, and it's really really funny because there's a line of why didn't you go for the head and that Thor is so stupid, and if it's Thor's fault that everyone died, or if it's for Star-Lord's fault that everybody died, or whose fault is it? And it is the best way to start this movie. We start off with Hawkeye losing his family, losing himself, just being destroyed, you know, and we get invested into him, not just because of one scene. One scene means nothing, but Age of Ultron built this family up, and his wife telling him that this team needs him for a balance because he is way more centered than they all are, and him losing that center that he has, that he is, which is a family man, which is a father, a husband, not just a guy who can see everything that goes around him very well. That is stupid. That has nothing to do with why Hawkeye is who he is. And they destroy that completely in the beginning. Then we talk about just if there is something that I can be proud of after watching this movie, is that I really love that they prove that fan service is not a bad thing. People use that as if it was a bad term, you know, like, oh, fan service. And I'm like, what? Why? Fan service is awesome. It means fans, after all, are what built the movies. They're what built this universe. If you don't have fans, you don't have money. If you don't have money, you don't have the movies. If you don't have fans, you don't even get these characters. I mean, Stan Lee would not have worked at what he did and be so invested into these kinds of characters if there weren't fans to service. And the fact of the matter is, this movie takes that and understands it, and understands the fact that you have a audience that already is invested 10 years into this property, and basically ignores the fact that this movie is not completely explanatory to the people that are not invested in the slightest into this movie. And some people went to see it and watch it, and they had never seen a movie before. There's actually a really awesome video on YouTube about a guy who takes his brother, I believe, who has never seen a Marvel movie ever, any of them. And that was really, really funny. And I thought that was really great, because you understand that he didn't get the whole movie, but that's not what this movie is about. The fans that they have, and the ones that they don't, they're going to get with the other movies, the ones that are coming after this moment, after the endgame. And so we go back to the reality. The original Avengers and what we opened with. Hawkeye is a result of Age of Ultron. Cap starts off helping others, just like he did before, just like he wanted when he wasn't Captain America, when he was just Steve Rogers, and just like he knows how to do as a matter because of the way that he is. And I love that we invest ourselves into the change, the evolution, the graduation, if you will, of these characters from what they have had in the past to what they are now. Hear me out. Hawkeye, we get a scene, that's so that we get a context into the movie, but we also get Captain Marvel confronting the previous Avengers as a defeated group, you know, that they didn't, and she's probably never been defeated as Captain America, not that we know of as of right now. And that entails that she is someone who knows she is way more powerful than any of the people there, probably even more than Thor, which is the one that could hold a battle against her. And she goes, you know what, if you guys are just going to stay here and cry, I'm going to go and kill this guy. And so they decide to move, they go, and in a matter of minutes, of 10 minutes or 20 minutes, the movie ends the way that you think it's going to end. They go, they find Thanos, they find where he's living, they tell him, what did you do? He said, I destroyed the stones, which is a plot trope that everyone should understand, because they're like, oh, if you get the stones, you can destroy the stones, and then the stones never exist. And it's great, because then you can't rely on that idea. You can't rely on the cliche of all this movie's going to do is find the person and have revenge. No, it's not about revenge. It's about growing past loss. It's about picking yourself up after you have lost towards someone that you shouldn't have. And it is amazing, because right after that, you see the 5 years later font destroy you and go, what? They had to live with this? They had to live through this? This is crazy. And we see what the time entails. And we see Captain America going, you know what I saw today? Over the river, I saw whales, because there is less pollution, because there are less people in the world, and so they are able to live freely, I guess. And here sits Black Widow, and she's still about to cry, and people, and you can see that they are trying to, like coordinate a worldwide search and a worldwide justice society, or, you know, Avengers society, and they can't. You know, they're just a couple of scattered superheroes that once were. And here comes Captain America, and he's not even in the meeting. He just comes to see how she is, because he knows how wrecked she is, and he's always about helping others. And we see him in the focus group that where they're like talking about how it's been after the 5 years. And that's not Captain America, that's Steve Rogers. That's the man behind the superhero. And he has always been about Captain America first and Steve Rogers last, because of his war mentality, you know? He started off as a guy who wanted to work for his country. He wanted to save his people. And then he became into someone who wanted to save the world. And so what happens here is that you see a Captain America who has to deal with these 5 years, and he is always like, okay, so if we lost, what do we do with ourselves? What do? We pick ourselves up. And he says this phrase that is super powerful, that says, we have to do something. The world is ours. If not, then Thanos should have killed all of us and not half of us, or something to that matter. We see Iron Man completely going from selfish to family man, to a father, to a person who has to live and breathe and think about another human being who depends upon him, who knows nothing but what his parents have taught him. And if she is 5 years old, well then she doesn't know a world in which Thanos existed, or a world before Thanos existed. So he has to build a world of greatness from the ashes of a world that was. And that is so powerful, when you see him make her laugh, make her smile, and you still know that he's hurting. You know that he's longing for somebody to talk to, and he probably does with, you know, with Pepper, but it's not enough. And so they come to him and they talk to him, and it is great. This is probably one of the best back and forths that we get of them, even counting the one in the beginning where he's so desperate, and you see how he sees the wrong of his ways of being selfish and thinking he can fix everything on his own. And he looks to Cap as soon as he gets to Earth and he says, I lost the kid. I lost the kid. He's not your kid. He's somebody else's kid, but you took him. You took Peter Parker as your kid, and yes, you lost him. It must all been brought back as soon as he had Morgan Stark be born. You know, and as you see as he washes his dishes, how he longs for that son that he had, that he adopted, that he lost. And that he's now trying to make up as a father who lost his kid with his other kid. And he's probably a great father at that, but he's still thinking about what happened before, what he could have done better, what he could have built better. And that's why I believe that even if we see one scene about it, I think he had been trying to go around time travel in some way or another. I think that he understood that somewhat he was disappointed. That Doctor Strange said that there was only one way. And he didn't get to know what that way was. And that comes back in the end of the movie, and I think that is awesome. And then we also see Banner. We see how he has changed after those 5 years. He's gone from a person who saw Hulk as a disease to a person who saw Hulk as a cure, as something else, as a superpower, as a part of himself. And he puts the brains and the muscle together, and he gets to be the best version of himself. And not just that, he understands his capability, his power, and his responsibility. And you see that later on when he gets his arm completely toast, just completely just burnt off. Thor is just a wreck of himself. Thor is just, he realizes that deep down he still had a bit of that warrior attitude, that egotistic, just God like person who thought he was above everything and could do anything, and even if he had lived 3,000 years and they had tried to kill him 3,000 times and he'd always survived, maybe this was the time that he survived and he didn't want to survive. Maybe this is the time that he wanted to lose and he didn't, because of revenge. And so he blames himself. He blames himself, and you see him. And the fact, I love the fact that he is fat, because he should be, because he doesn't care, because he's so hurt and disappointed in himself that he is not worthy of looking godlike. If you are depressed, if you are hit by something, do you believe you would take care of your body, of your hair, of your whatever? Of your house, of the friends you live with, of your people. You are a king of Asgard. And you don't even go and help the people that you gave a home. Yeah, big deal. You have to do something about that. And Valkyrie is the best version of a queen after his mother. And she's there. And she says, you're not going to see him. He's not going to see you. And you understand, she has probably tried to no end, but she also doesn't have the bond that Hulk and Banner and Rocket had with him at some point. He goes to a team player. He becomes grateful to what he has, grateful to the friends he has, to the past, to growing from what he did and not sulking on what he did not do. Finally, Black Widow. Black Widow is someone who we see is, since the beginning, trying to clean out her red book. That phrase, that drama that she has with somebody else. And it is great to see how she started off as someone who wanted to completely understand how to become a better person. And she says she founded the Avengers, a family, and that is how she became better. She was better. She kept becoming better. And now she doesn't have them. That's why she has the ultimate sacrifice in this movie. That is how you know that she will do something, even if Hawkeye aka Clint, doesn't want him to, doesn't want her to. And that is how we get to the next part, which is part two. Part two is basically time travel. And it is great because when they figure out time travel, when Stark figures out time travel and says to Pepper, I can throw this away because I don't know if I should mess with this. I should just go to sleep. And she says, yeah, but would you be able to rest? Knowing that you might have the key to helping the billions of people who died. And the billions of people who miss them. And that's how it happens. And that's how you see Ant-Man come into place. Ant-Man comes into place because there is always help from the universe. There is always a rat that will push the button that brought him back. It is great to see how Ant-Man comes back. And he basically gets undusted, if per se. Goes to his family and you see him look at his daughter. Look at everything they had lived through and say, I am back. I never died. But of course, then he realizes that he did lose the person he loved. In this case, the Wasp. And that's why he does his effort. It's great to see how when Ant-Man comes back, he's crying. He is suffering. He is in pain because for him it was a couple of hours. He comes back and the people he loves have been gone for 5 years. People have tried to deal and move on from this and he hasn't. He's just been a couple of hours into the loss. And that's why he pressures Tony Stark. And that's why Tony gets back to working on the time travel, figures it out, and off we go. Off we go to New York, to space, and to the 1970s, by the way, which was awesome, and I'm going to break that up into places. Oh, and Asgard, of course. Let's start off with New York. I think the biggest thing about New York that I take away from it is the fights, you know, how they relive what happened after Avengers, the original one. And I thought that was hilarious because, of course, there has to be a lot of politics and, like, bureaucratic processes that happen after all that. They have to turn over the stone, the Mind Stone, the Tesseract. And it is great. I really, really enjoyed it. Because, of course, Captain America would think that if he sees himself in that circumstance, it's Loki who has escaped and is pretending to be him. And, of course, that the guy from Hydra is the one behind all this, and that's why he wants the Tesseract and the Mind Stone. And it all just makes sense, but it's things that we didn't see on screen. So, of course, we would go, oh, well, that's just speculating. It's amazing. It's amazing to think that we got more out of the movies that we had already seen by the movie that closes out the whole saga or universe. I really enjoyed the role that they gave to the Ancient One. And the fact that it was Banner who went to see her and he's all physics and all physical. And all, you know, basically Doctor Strange through. If Doctor Strange was gamma expert. And she takes him out of his body, which there's nothing Hulk can do at that point. Because that's his spirit. And it's great because they get to throw ideas at each other. And it's science versus magic, which is basically science that has not been explained to the law levels, and she understands. And Banner doesn't know how he did it, but he did it. He tells her, well, first she tells him that Doctor Strange isn't Doctor Strange as of right now. He's Surgeon Doctor Strange. And it's awesome because a lot of people could be like, what? How do you know about somebody who hasn't met you yet? And that's a part of the curse. You know, she I remember from his movie that she said that she had visited the moment of her passing, the moment of her death. She's visited hundreds of thousands of times just to see if she could see afterwards, after that. And she couldn't. And it makes sense. You can have the time stone, but you still have your time limit. And yeah, there's probably a thousand different ways in which she died and everything. She probably visited every single one of them. But she couldn't look past any of those. It doesn't matter how many millions of deaths she visited. Her death is her death. And so she realizes that she made a mistake. And that Doctor Strange is making up for that mistake. And that he's solving a big issue. Bigger than she thinks. And gives him the stone. I love that she trusts in Strange. In trusting Banner. I love that. I believe that is very powerful. That is a message to trust, to faith. Which are all non-scientific. That's exactly why they belong to Doctor Strange. After New York, we move to the 1970s because they screw up and Loki takes the Tesseract. So they have to go to somewhere where they think the Tesseract is. And that's S.H.I.E.L.D. installations in the 70s. And we see the Stan Lee cameo, which was awesome. It's going to be horrible when we get Marvel movies that don't have cameos by him because he only pre-recorded so many scenes. And the 1970s one is the one that hit me the most. Because Cap and Tony basically foreshadowed their respective deaths, their respective sendaways in this time travel scene. They get the Pym particles and they get into the facility and Tony meets Howard and Cap sees Peggy. And you can see how Tony is so giddy about seeing his father and he's all like, I want to tell you how much I've accomplished and the message that was sent to him in Iron Man 2 when he finally didn't have to die from palladium and creates his own new element that is not going to contaminate and kill him just so that he can kill himself. You see how selfish he becomes in the beginning? How all the stories are about how horrible he was in his past, how selfish, how much of an ego he had, and how he looked at everyone under him. And that became a superhero. And the superhero is what taught him to change. In Iron Man 1, he learned that you shouldn't trust everyone. And you should understand the people who you give your trust to. Because he got played by his father's best friend. In Iron Man 2, he has to pay for his selfishness. Because he doesn't want to give the suit away. So people can't investigate the suit. So they can't realize what... Ivan Vanko, I think was his name. I don't remember the name of the bad guy. But the bad guy, basically, whose father died from that. And he has to recur to his father's teachings from the past. Then in the third one, he gets to pay for his past mistakes. He destroyed someone else's dreams and hopes. And in response, the so-called Mandarin, which wasn't the Mandarin, decided to destroy his. To own the world of weapons, just like Tony did. At some point. And in Captain America Civil War, he learns that sometimes you have to forgive. You have to know that people make mistakes. They will let you down. That doesn't make them less friends, less heroes than you. And that circumstance is almost everything. Because sometimes you don't have a choice. They don't have a choice, and it is your responsibility to make it. Accountability is something that has haunted Tony Stark. And so, he talks to his father, and his father tells him the utmost important phrase of the whole movie. And he says that it's great that, I think that it's great that his daughter doesn't look like him, because, I mean, that he hopes that his son doesn't look, doesn't end up like him, because normally his personal agenda outweighs the wellness and the well-being of others. And that's what a son or daughter in Tony's case will do. Morgan put the world in perspective. He had to think about someone else before he thought about himself. That is why he fought with Pepper. That is why they got along and didn't get along. That is why, because she thought she worried about him. And he worried about him. But when he had to worry about Morgan, about his daughter, about somebody he loves more than himself, well then you graduate superhero class. That's what he did. Then we go to space. That's what I'm going to end this first part with. Space is Asgard. And the two planets, you know, the one where the Guardians are. Well, where Star-Lord was, and the one where the Soul Stone is. And I'll say this. The best scene that Thor gives is him speaking to his mother. And we don't see a lot of it, but we see how she can read him like a book. And he wants to try and save her life, and she can see that. Because he said he was from the future, and she could see that as well. And she still told him, don't worry about my future. Worry about yours. And that phrase probably is the thing that sparked the idea of calling to himself Mjolnir. Gets the hammer, leaves with Rocket. That pays off later. That is awesome. Then we go to Star-Lord, and I love that part because that is just a setup piece for the villain. And I love that the villain again is Thanos, because you understand that when he sees and he finds out that he eventually wins and he gets all the stones and he snaps and he kills half of the universe, he sees the wrong in his ways, but in an even worse way. He goes, okay, so I killed half the universe, but there is still the other half, since it's completely merciful, and I don't select who I kill, there's still people, there's bad people, ungrateful people, that are going to stay alive, and are going to remind the others of how crappy it is to not have the other people around, and not be grateful for what he supposedly did in fixing the world. So he decides, as a godlike judging creature that he thinks or of himself to be, Thanos decides he's going to wipe, he's going to just clean slate the whole thing. Just destroy everything and build it back up, because the stones can do that. And that's what we get from that. We get Nebula getting stuck with her father. We get Thanos realizing what he does in the future, and so deciding to do it now, take a shortcut, sees that they're gathering the stones, and goes, why do I gotta wait all these years? I can just go to the future, get the stones, which, by the way, were already in a gauntlet that Tony built. And the last thing is, and that's what I'll close this part one of Avengers Endgame commentary, is the sacrifice. When they leave Nebula and Rhodey, where Star-Lord's going to be. Black Widow and Clint, they leave to the Soul Stone planet. And I love that nobody knew that they had to do the sacrifice, because Nebula, what she said when she figured out that Gamora was dead in Infinity War, she said, he killed her. He left to get the Soul Stone with her and came back without her. It never crossed their mind that it would require a soul to get a soul. Because why would you? You don't know the rules. And so when they get on the plane, well, on the ship, on the, I know it has a name, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the Guardians' ship. The, I forgot. And Clint looks at Natasha and he says, we're really far away from Budapest. Oh man, I knew it was done. At the moment, I thought it was going to be him because of, you know, because he was also trying to clean his ledger for the things he had done for the past 5 years. And then it all made sense because Natasha had no family. The Avengers were her family. And so her final way of growth from a spy and an assassin that probably killed as many people as we can count to, her final sacrifice was for her family. And in that way, very much like Tony Stark. He did this for his family. He does what he does after Morgan H. Stark is born. And I love that. Because the weight of when they get back from the time travel and she's not there, and Clint falls to his knees, crying, sobbing, and everyone starts to be depressed, and Nebula's just thinking about the way to get her father to this time so that he can steal the Infinity Stones, we start to forget. And that is key for the setup of part 3 of the final battle of the best part of the whole movie. I love that we later get to know that Hulk, when he did the snap, the reason why it burnt him so hard was that he was trying to bring back people who aren't able to be brought back. Because Vision's still dead, Natasha's still dead, and for all intents and purposes, Gamora's still dead. And I thought that was very, very, very well done. You can see consequential actions take place. I loved it because when Clint gets the phone call from his wife, you should think about, oh, everybody came back. They're all back. They're alive now. And as soon as your brain is going to go there, just like Ant-Man, that he's looking through the window and he's thinking to himself all the good things that they just did by bringing everyone back, boom, you get the missiles. And that's what I'm going to end part one of this commentary with. You're going to have to wait for the second part. Thank you so much for listening to this first part. Part two is going to be just as amazing, if not more, about the analysis of the importance of this movie, about the power of the scenes and characters in this movie. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, for waiting for this episode. Follow me on social media at Real Apple Worm on Instagram and Twitter, and everywhere else at DVD19931. Read up on the blog at oneappleworm.blogspot.com. We'll be back. I'll be talking to you guys about the awesome and amazing final battle of Avengers Endgame. Until then, talk to you later.